here. Your court call or court conference operator will be with you momentarily. Please ensure that you are dialing in from a landline and be prepared to provide your name, name of your judge, and any attorney substitution information to the operator.
Please stand by.
Colon, COLIN.
I'm sorry?
Colon, COLIN.
Okay, and we do have 2 seconds.
Can we just Bernstein case?
I'm sorry, sir?
On the Bernstein case, Bernstein?
Yes.
Okay, I need you to connect those.
Okay, one moment. Disconnected at this time.
Okay, who's on court call on the Simon Bernstein case?
Erwin Roscoe for Julie and Joey and Lisa Freestein. Erwin Black representing Donald Petch in connection with his discharge.
Who's the first one?
Lisa Freestein was the one.
Say, the first lawyer, say who you are again. I didn't get the name.
William
Glasgow. William Glasgow. Okay. All right, so this is the State of Simon Bernstein, 2012, CP004391, Curator's Second Amended Petition for Instruction Regarding Scope of Involvement in Florida Litigation. Mr. Brown.
Yes, sir. Essentially, what's happened since the very first time we were in here on that litigation, if you recall, there were several co-defendants in that case, the estate being one of them. There were several entities, and then there was also Ted Bernstein, who was represented by Alan Rose, was one of the co-defendants. And
you're talking about the William Stansbury versus Ted Bernstein, et cetera, the case before Judge Block.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so essentially, Ted was actively defending paying Mr. Rose to do so. He was taking depositions, but got the discovery, became very familiar with the facts and law involved in that case. There was a mediation on June 9th, and as a result of that, Ted and two of the entities settled with Mr. Stansbury. That left only the estate and Bernstein Family Realty LLC, which is, I believe, the manager of that LLC is purported to be Oppenheimer Company, and they have counsel, who I believe is out of Miami, not here. But in any event, what it has resulted in is that the estate is now, in this case, still the defendant. I have not retained separate counsel. I do not want to incur the expense. I am not very familiar with the facts or the law. Certainly have nowhere near the knowledge that Mr. Rose has. And I just got a settlement.
Actively seeking relief against the estate now that they settled with the other people?
Yes. Mr. Feynman, who is not here, but sent a settlement offer that he believes is rock bottom and had a 2-week fuse on it that expires on June 27th for $250,000. I'm not, as curator, even in a position really to evaluate a $250,000 offer, except that I do know generally that commercial litigation in circuit civil court, if you do take it through to a jury trial, I have not had a jury trial in 18 years, but I know they're expensive. Probably runs in the $150,000 to $200,000. So the people who are in a position to evaluate it are Alan Rose and Ted Bernstein. However, as Your Honor is well aware, Elliot Bernstein has raised issues about both Alan and Ted. So just going out and saying, okay, guys, I'll start paying you now to evaluate this is not something that I'm comfortable as curator doing.
So ordinarily, you would have a PR appointed, PR would then hire counsel, and
right.
PR would make the decision on how to defend the estate and the litigation against the estate.
Correct. And now what I don't have in the motion, and I'm going to file today, is I'm going to file a motion to stay the Judge Blank case. Because now that we have July 11th and July 16th, I can at least represent to the judge this is not some open-ended stay.
Right. Well, and that's kind of what I was thinking out loud, that since we have those two dates coming up soon, in which hopefully I'll be able to appoint the PR, is there something going on in that Judge Blanc case between now and mid-July that the parties are pushing?
There is the settlement offer that expires on June 27th.
Okay, well,
I've asked that it be extended.
They can decide that they want to revive that once there's a PR pending, someone who's in a position to evaluate it. But if I have Stansberry's acknowledgement that nothing's going to happen in the Judge Blom case until we can resolve the issue of the PR, that'll save money. You don't have to go back before Judge Blom and ask him for a stay. We'll just know nothing's going to happen until I can make the decisions here on the hearings that are coming up. Does that sound reasonable?
Well, Your Honor, the only thing is that we have to set the line with Mr. Stansberry as to whether or not we can do that. I would like to prepare to discuss that in court today. And we'll prepare that with the client as to whether or not.
Well, because otherwise they have to file a motion to stay. That's gonna, you know, cost money that probably is needless.
That's a minor expense, Your Honor. I had a summer associate do. I just won't call it up for hearing until Mr. Royer lets me know.
Okay. All right. Well, that, I mean, I think there's a need for PR to get appointed for a lot of reasons, and this is one of them. Okay. So does anyone have a contrary position? Okay, Elliot.
I believe he said that there was settlement, and I believe that settlement occurred in Shirley's estate with Ted acting and his counsel to negotiate a settlement where Ted is a main defendant, so he negotiated both sides of that settlement.
No, I'm not. This is in the Stansberry versus Bernstein case.
Okay, that's the case I'm talking about, meaning they...
013.
Yeah. That, exactly. So there was a settlement he just told you about with two parties. One was Ted individually, and I can understand Ted and Alan settling for Ted individually, that's fine. But when Ted went and negotiated a settlement for the estate of Shirley, while he's a defendant in that case, there's an abort, you know, the conflict is overwhelming and the violations of fiduciary. Okay, Ted is a defendant in the case. Correct. And he's the main defendant who's accused of most of the crimes that are being brought into the estate because Cy was his partner. But most of the allegations are against Ted. So Ted is negotiating a settlement with Ted on the other side. So he's negotiating a Shirley's PR because you allowed that, or trustee or whatever they settled with, which is a total violation. He's got an attorney representing both sides of the settlement when he's one of the parties in the suit. It's insane.
That is all... something that Judge Blanc has to deal with in the case before him, because that's where that settlement's been brought.
Well, no, the settlement was in the estate of Shirley, which is under your jurisprudence, I believe.
I'm told, though, that the settlement that Mr. Brown's talking about is in the Judge Blanc litigation.
No, but they settled with Shirley's estate.
No.
With, yes.
One of the defendants.
I'm a little confused, so help me out.
Before Mr. Rosky, I'll just approach and give you this is the settlement. And that's the capacities that those parties purported to settle for. And I don't follow the Ted versus Ted part either, but.
What did you say?
I said I don't follow the Ted versus Ted part either.
Ted's settling.
What else?
So in the Judge Blanc case, the plaintiff is William Stansberry. The defendants are Ted individually, Ted is successor trustee of Shirley's Trust, and then there are some companies.
Right.
Okay, and that's a de novo piece of litigation,
right.
And those parties have decided to settle.
Well, Shirley's estate was represented by Ted, so Ted has a conflicting interest. Of course he wants Shirley's estate, or whoever he's...
Ted is a party individually.
But he's acting as trustee to Shirley's estate.
He's also a party as successor trustee.
Wait. Now when he goes to negotiate settlement, somebody's got to represent the trust that isn't conflicted. Ted's conflicted with the case. How can he represent? And no notice to anybody.
That's not meaningful because when you use the words conflicted, I mean, you have to be able to put that in a legal content perspective, and that's not what's happening. So,
well, wait.
Notwithstanding that you say Ted had a conflict between himself individually and himself as successor trustee of Shirley's Trust, is that what your position is?
I'm saying he's settling a case where he's a defendant, and then he's settling with a trust that he's trustee and supposed to be acting as a fiduciary.
And he's settling for the trust, both.
While he's a defendant in the case.
Yeah.
So he's got an interest to settle adversely against the estate.
Because you say so doesn't make it true.
Oh, okay.
And this is not testimonial hearing.
Just what I heard.
I don't know if that's the case, and if someone has a problem with this settlement, that's addressed before Judge Blanc. Because I don't have any jurisdiction over the case. I can't.
Gotcha.
I know nothing about the case. That's why I'm hesitating there.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So, but I think if I'm honing in on something that I can deal with, the issue is on Mr. Brown's petition for instructions. If the case is not going to be further litigated before Judge Blanc, pending me making decisions on the PR, that seems to be the way to go. Does everyone agree with that concept?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
All right, so you guys are in agreement. I mean, that's the right way of doing it. Okay, so what else do I have to decide?
Well, just for the record, I disagree with everything that Mr. Brown said. No, I just want to put that on the record. That's all I'm going
to
say about it.
But here's the thing. We have to get past the aspect that the fact that there are parties here that don't agree with what each other does. That happens all the time, and you don't have to spend time always saying, either of you, I don't like what the other person does. They're not a nice person. They're conflicted. I mean, you know, in litigation, it is what it is, and I'm honing in on legal rules and legal statutes and rules of procedure. And you folks are more into kind of what names you can call each other, and that's not, that doesn't have any impact on me. I mean, I'm way past that point. So, you know, if there's something substantively that I'm to look at, I'll always look at it. Okay, so, Mr. Rose, what else do you want to tell me about as far as this motion goes?
No, you would ask questions about the rule on this, that's fine. I had suggested that Mr. Stansbury agree to defer to the VR.
All right, well, it sounds like.
Jake, I just reserved. I mean, I'll talk to Mr. Stansbury. I was prepared to do that. I don't anticipate a problem. I just can't decide on the record as I sit here.
All right, so let's go that route.
Okay, wait.
All right, that's fine.
And, Your Honor, I want to add one thing. I agree with you. You know, I understand adversaries, but there's no evidence that exists that they are threatening force and aggressive tactics against me and my family.
Let me stop you for a second.
Okay.
In any situation like that, we don't use UMC, which is non-evidentiary, as a springboard for that to take.
Well, I asked for an emergency hearing because my life's in danger. These people are threatening and acting on the letter that threatens. Okay, sorry.
Okay. So, to adjudicate whatever it is that's raised, we have hearings. And then I can actually put people under oath, and then I can hear
evidence. I could be dead by that time.
Well, but I can't do it in advance of having a hearing.
Well, I gave you the stuff yesterday. Well, I filed another one today.
But you understand that there's administrative orders on what constitutes an emergency.
Okay, I re-put it in today with more of your laws, and I cited some Bullock versus Cox nonsense.
No, but remember that I'm not going to do anything without a hearing. And I'm giving access to hearings. We have two coming up on the 11th and the 16th.
But by that time, I could be dead.
Oh, yeah, but Elliot,
okay, will you do it on the 11th? Hear that?
Well, I don't know. No.
Oh.
I don't know whether we have time to hear that matter. And remember one thing. I looked at your motion. Okay, so I denied it as an emergency and said that you could set it in ordinary course. Because it's not a legal emergency.
Okay.
But the other problem is that, and you're pro se, so I'll take this opportunity. If you look in the rules, one of the early rules, I forgot the number, in the civil rule says that when you plead something, you're supposed to have short and plain statements of ultimate facts and a short and plain statement of what it is that you want to achieve. Okay.
I redid it that way.
The operative words are short and plain.
Okay.
That means you don't use these pleadings as stories and you don't use these pleadings as argument. And so, when you file a motion that's as long as your motions are, that has all that stuff in it, you lose, to be candid with you, the impact that you want to have on the reader, which is me, because I'm having to start to figure out, and it's hard to follow some of the of what you're trying to put. And that's why they encourage you in pleadings to just say, and you can plead. You could have pled what you wanted to plead in one page. Just come right to the point. This is the story. This is what I want. Here are my facts. Facts, not arguments. Okay? And so I think from now on you need to curtain the long verbosity of the pleading and come right to the point, because I'll get it then. Because that's what you want. You want me to read it and say, I understand it, I get it, and then evidence follows. It's just, we're a notice pleading state. I give them notice what I want to accomplish. I say for the hearing what the evidence is. Because that's what I'm going to decide. I don't decide what people write.
Can I ask you one last question? If you're tired of my pleadings, which God knows I'm tired of pleading them, and we understand my life is in danger if you read that pleading that they've threatened force against me, including the attorneys at law who are involved in these prior frauds going on in this court. Well, because there's been fraud on this court already by officers of this court against me that are depriving me of property and rights, that are hurting my children, that are now threatening me and to use force and aggressive behavior. Oh, no. All I'm asking is, can't you appoint counsel for me and tell the estate to provide it?
The answer is I'm not allowed to. I can't. It's a civil case. I can't appoint counsel. I mean, so I'm not going to do something that's not legal to do. Okay.
Can you have the curator allot funds to defend beneficiaries who are minor children?
I don't know. But okay. That's something that you need to discuss with Mr. Brown. I can't.
Okay. Well, that was perfect. No, I'm going to find out. Thank you.
Okay.
Have a great day. Good to see you're feeling better.
We addressed, so this is free for all. This is important.
All right.
He filed a motion yesterday, emergency motion to qualify our law firm. Qualify our law firm, John Mankowski and Ted, in all of our capacities. It would make sense.
Okay, well, so hold on. If there's a motion to disqualify counsel, I treat that the same way as I do a motion to disqualify the court. You know, I rule on those right away, and that has to obviously get set.
Well, I would think what I was going to suggest to Your Honor with your permission is we have 2 days at July 11th. The issues he's talking about in here are a lot of the same issues we're going to be dealing with on July 11th. I mean,
do you want that motion heard on July 11th?
I mean, this is motion to...
Yeah. Yeah, you said yes.
That makes sense to me.
What do you say?
I do think there's a lot of overlap of issues.
What do you say to hearing your motion on the 11th?
Okay, I have a very serious problem. Part of the threatening letter that I submitted to you and that pleading yesterday, that's verbose, deals with the fact that the strategy outlined in the letter that they wrote to each other uses one of legal abuse to get depositions to harass and harangue people like me and get private and confidential information.
But you're missing my question.
Yes.
You filed a motion.
Yeah, but look here.
Everyone wants to get it heard.
I want to get it heard before I have to be deposed, because if it is knocked out that it's determined that they're using that deposition and production to actually harm people and make me reveal information about who's prosecuting them, what state agencies I filed against all that stuff, I don't want to give it to them. So the bottom line is we need to hear the privilege claim and see if this whole thing's BS. And the bottom line is...
The privilege claim is the inadvertent disclosure claim?
Of a document sent from Elliot.
He's republished in his pleading yesterday.
I have not republished anything except a website.
He has republished knowingly the contents of the emails in this paper in violation of Rule 1.285, because even if it's not been determined to be privileged, we invoked the rule, you agreed, we both invoked it properly, so I invoked it and he challenged it. And he's ordered to sequester it and not use it. And he has used it in this case.
I have not used that email once. I used a website where it's public information, Your Honor.
You can't put in a pleading.
Oh, well.
You can't do anything based on that rule of procedure.
I put a...
Once there's a challenge to inadvertent disclosure...
Well, my life's in risk. And this, I know, but I can't play around. My children and my life are at risk.
It has nothing to do, Mr. Bernstein, with publishing something in violation of that rule.
Well, you know what? That rule says that if it's privileged and it contains threatening and harmful information, he's required by law to be bringing it to your attention, not claiming privilege falsely on a document that was sent from my brother to me with no other attorney on it. There's no way to claim it privilege. This is a ruse, Your Honor, and they're trying to get very sensitive information about federal and state investigations I've put against them, and they're trying to do it before this hearing, and it's a tactic that's described in this supposed privilege letter between two brothers that, you know, is so failed that you need to make that decision soon to protect us. Otherwise, you're exposing us. Meaning, why can't we have it before the deposition and the production? Well, let's hear it tomorrow. It's important. Lives are dependent on it. Somebody's threatening force against me, Your Honor. Force is bodily harm, injury that could lead to death. And by the way, there's allegations that my father was murdered. It doesn't look so much like his girlfriend anymore, but the people who were involved in all these forgeries and frauds and everything else, which would include Mr. Rose and his gang of lawyers.
Okay, stop.
I'm done.
You can. I've also moved to strike. It should be stricken from the record because it contains privileged materials. He should be forced to file new motions.
But I have to see it first.
It has in it the privileged email, and he keeps sending
it. But
if I
see it, then what's the difference? I see everything.
Okay. Would you like us to do a notice of that motion?
Yeah, I'll just have to.
Okay.
Can we delay the production and depositions?
No.
So you're going to force me to go give private and confidential information that they plan on using to hurt people?
Last word. At the deposition, if you have a legally based objection, you can make it then.
Okay.
That's what the rules say.
Okay.
You see, the problem with what you're doing is you're using UMC as a basis to air that, and it's not the right position.
I tried to schedule a thing.
So at a deposition, if you have a proper legal basis to object, that's when you do it.
Okay.
You do it in advance. I don't even know what the question is.
So I can go to the deposition and say this is being used to harm me in violation of law?
No, I'm not. That's what you're saying.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying at a deposition, listen carefully, if you have a legally proper basis, not Elliot Bernstein's decision on whether it's legal or not, but a rule or statute-based objection, you can make it.
Okay.
And that applies to everybody.
And I'm not going to do anything that endangers people, okay, whether you order it or not.
Okay, fine.
I was
Okay, fine.
Okay. I did have one more.
All right, let me
see it. This relates to the Illinois litigation, the life insurance trust litigation. What has happened is that Elliot made a request for production of documents on the curator, and the curator's office produced the Petra Scalina files minus privileged documents to Elliot, and he located a 2000 life insurance trust. And then is basically, I believe, conceding that it really doesn't necessarily have any bearing on the Illinois litigation, but has asked the curator's office to subpoena records from Proskauer. Proskauer drafted the 2000 life insurance trust. Most of the subject matter of that subpoena that has been requested, I believe, are beyond the scope of the estate. It also is my analysis that any subpoena that might issue from anybody should come from the Illinois litigation, because that's what it relates to. But just kind of circling back to some of the things that Elliot has said, is that he has suggested that the curator has an obligation to report primarily to Mr. Petra and Mr. Spallina to criminal and bar disciplinary authorities based on the fact that they apparently didn't disclose this 2000 life insurance trust to Elliot.
Or the federal court.
I have been a curator, as you know, before, and I don't perceive that to be the role of the curator. I understand that Elliot, I believe, has already reported Petra and Spallina to the bar.
So your question is what?
Was whether or not I need to respond to requests to report different incidents that may have occurred.
Listen carefully, everybody, about how this is. You're a curator, okay? You're empowered to do what a curator is allowed to do, just like if you were a PR. If someone asks you to do something, you decide whether it's appropriate to do or not as curator. You don't need to ask me, or shouldn't ask me, each and every time that happens. This is why you're in that position. You're both, it's a position of trust, it's a decision-making one. So if someone doesn't like your decision, then they can always come before me. But you're empowered to make those upfront, because otherwise I would inform you. I just do all the decisions myself, and that's the truth about that. Okay. So the answer is, deny your motion for instructions. There are no instructions I've given you other than just be curator.
Okay,
all
right. Thank you.
Okay.
Can we stay?
All right, see you folks.
Just for the record, I believe the fees for that hearing on the 2000 insurance trust should be borne by Mr. Stansberry.
We're not deciding today. I just want to put, I just want to put on the record.
I'm not ruling any of that.
I know. I just want to put on the record.
Your Honor.
No, pre-pool.
If I live that long.
Sure you will.
Oh, really? From your mouth to God's ears. People probably murdered my father.
Until the 11th.
That's good.
I'm maintaining status quo because I'm churning fees that is coming out of all of your pockets.
No, it's coming out of theirs in a minute.
It will come.
I know.
It might come out of somebody's.
Yeah.
But just, we've got 17 days. Let me.
Where's this house?
Not build for the next 17 days. Is everybody okay
yeah.
with that?
Perfect.
Okay.
Well, I might have one thing.
Except
I'm
saying. Except for I need to talk to Jeff about just need to let me know what Bill says about staying the case. Or not staying the case, but just kind of agreeing to forbear.
Did you check where his house is located? What? I love it.